You're listening to the new Power 1220, WENC, Whiteville, North Carolina.
And happy Sunday, and welcome to the conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. It is Sunday, July 27, 2025. We're happy you're in with us today on WENC, Power 1220. Sherelle James is here. Hey, Sherelle.
Hey, hey, hey. How you doing?
Well, I'm okay. We had our premiere episode last week. Try to introduce ourselves to the community. I got a lot of positive feedback. People did listen to the program. One of the things that you can do, just a programming note right off the bat, that you can always go back and listen afterwards. So tell your friends, family that the conversation is available on the website. There's a link right there at the top where you can click on to hear the conversation anytime during the week. If you didn't get it on Sunday, we're going to be here Sundays at 2 p.m. For the conversation. Some station news right off the bat before we get into what we want to talk about today, Sherelle. We got some programs coming. So starting in a week or so, Marvin Sapp will be on Sunday afternoons. At Sundays at noon, we'll have a hip-hop gospel countdown for the younger folks. So from noon to two, there's a gospel hip-hop program, and then Marvin Sapp is on after that. During the week, you'll hear some new programming. North Carolina News Network will be on hourly for the news and weather and sports and that kind of thing. We have a deal for some other public affairs programs on Sunday. And then throughout the day, you'll be hearing other programming. So in the afternoon, we have an old school R&B program, and then we'll have a late night Quiet Storm program as well. So we're working on a lot of things, Sherelle, and I'm really excited about how the station is turning out. Obviously, there's some still housekeeping to do. We got some things to do, but overall, I think we're moving in the right direction. So tell folks about WENC Power 1220. Make sure it's the place where you go to get your news and information. So it's music, news, and talk, and a whole lot more. And we're happy that you decided to join us this morning. Sherelle, one of the things that I've been really keenly interested in talking about, obviously the world's almost come to a halt over the Jeffrey Epstein stuff. There was a lot of hay made prior to the election about releasing the Epstein files and so on and so forth. And you know, the story's gone on for years. And now all of a sudden, the talk is that there's nothing else to be done about it, right? That all of a sudden, it's a non-story, according to Pam Bondi, the head of the Justice Department. Talk to me real quick about your take on the Epstein affair, as it were, because obviously, there's something there that some people don't want to talk about and they want to move on. And actually, a lot of people were trying to move on before, but it became a big campaign issue. And now they don't want to talk about it. Any thoughts on the Epstein affair?
I just think that just what it surrounds, right? We just got finished with the Diddy trials and we're talking about Epstein here. For both of them, kind of some of the things that surrounds their trials or their investigations. Inside of that, he was very influential. Inside of being influential, there seems to be a little black book with a whole lot of names. I'm just going to say this, and I'm going to leave it this way. In both scenarios, both men that I talked about, they made sure that they were connected to very influential people and that they had evidence on very influential people. So I'm not saying anything happened or didn't happen because I wasn't there. So I can't say that. But what I will say is it's very interesting how it's open and closed when you have others who have spoken out about it. almost like it was known, it was accepted, it was just, oh, that's Joe in the corner. That, you know, you have that person that hang around, oh, that's just Joe. And you just let him do whatever he wants to do, and whether you agree with it or not. I think that's where we are with this. When you have a lot of influential people that are still alive, that have a lot of reasons to not let information get out, you're going to have an open and shut case.
Yeah. The door can get shut quickly when there's certain people involved. Because one of the things, you know, it took up a lot of air, you know, in the news, and a lot of questions at the press conference, daily press conference at the White House and such, where people trying to ask about the case. And then when they wanted to shut it off, they shut it off. And then on top of that, the Speaker of the House just closed down the House a week early. There was still business to be conducted. And Mike Johnson, the Speaker, cut off everything, which to me is indicative of a bigger problem here, is that we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. There are some critical issues that still need to be dealt with, but you're telling me that you're going to shut everything down because you don't want to deal with this other matter. I think there's some more shoes to drop, Sherelle. I don't know. You know, Elon Musk says that Donald Trump's in the Epstein files, and he's probably more apt to know than anybody because he was in everybody's business. He was able to get to, you know, all the government records, unlike anybody in the history of the world. So,
and we knew they were friends.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's no secret that they were really good friends. So,
yeah. Yeah,
I'm just going to leave that there.
Yeah, it is no secret. Right? It's a known secret, right? Yeah, yeah, and we can leave it there because, I suspect there's some other shoes to drop. Now, as we move on from that, Donald Trump is in Scotland. The president's in Scotland. And he did not get a warm welcome there, Sherelle. He has a golf course there. It's a little troubling to me that he mixes his personal business with the business of the United States, that he can go to Scotland to check on his golf course. But that's neither here nor there. He's been doing that. You know, he did it during the first term when he took over the old post office in downtown D.C. and turned it into a hotel. And then when he left, he sold it. And now he's in Scotland on the golf thing. Now, one of the other things, and we'll get off Donald Trump real quick, is that they've also reported in the last week that he has some health issues. Some circulatory issues has led to ankle swelling and the bruising on his hands and so on and so forth. So they did admit that. Let's get off Donald Trump. I'll ask you one thing, Sherelle. I did see some poll numbers. Some of the more reliable polls got his approval rating down in the 30s. Which means that it's eroding into the Trump faithful.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Epstein thing has finally caused people to go, wait a minute, I can't, this is a bridge too far. I can't go this far with him, particularly since he said that, you know, he was going to come and clean this up? Or why are the poll numbers at the 30 level now?
I think that, like, Epstein files and case was the cherry that just broke the camel's back, right? I think it is that people are now realizing that some of the things that he was saying that he wanted to do, they felt like they were on the other side of it, the winning side of it. And they're now realizing that, wait a minute, he was talking about us too. We're getting the brunt of all of that as well, because most of his followers are just American citizens, right? At the end of the day. They're high profile people that follow him and support him and are doing some things with him, but all of the legislation that he's putting out, the things that are being cut, people always say that Medicaid, and SNAP is, we're doing this to help the Black people. But the truth is, when you go and research, you'll find out that there's more white people on Medicaid and a lot of these benefits. So a lot of his supporters are being their benefits or things that are their livelihood, and they don't have a whole lot of money. Most of them do not. And when I say don't have a whole lot of money, I'm meaning not mega rich like he is, not wealthy in that sense. So they're average everyday people, middle class and beyond or below, and they're finding out that, oh, I didn't know I would have to sacrifice too. And I think that piece and then other stains that add to that, right, just kind of solidify this may not be the right way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that more than anything else is going to erode into his base, Sherelle, if people start losing benefits. And what I've been seeing is these stories in West Virginia and Kentucky and places like that where people are saying, well, more than 50-60% of our school funding comes from federal government. If it doesn't come, then we got a problem. There are whole towns where everybody's on Medicaid in West Virginia, in Kentucky, in Alabama, Mississippi. And so what's going to happen when they don't get the funds, or the restrictions become so odious for people to try to get on these programs that they just fail to do it? Then you have negative health outcomes, because then people end up going to the ER, and then hospital ends up eating those costs, or they pass those costs on to you and me, people who are insured, or people who are employed. Yeah, so I want to remind you, you're listening to The Conversation on WENC, the new Power 1220 in Whiteville, North Carolina. I'm Ed Clark. Sherelle James is here. Our second episode. So we're happy that we made it to number two, Sherelle. And hopefully we'll have a lot more of these. And again, if you're interested in being a guest on The Conversation, drop us a line at ed@wencradio.com. That's ed@wencradio.com. We'd like to hear from you. We want to know what you want to talk about. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about Whiteville in particular. There was a big announcement regarding FEMA. I'll hold that for the third segment. But in the meantime, Sherelle, again, to get people accustomed to what we do, we talk about bigger national and international issues up front, and then we move down to local issues in Columbus County and then Whiteville. But one of the other things that I am concerned about, Sherelle, is economic news is pending this week. Wednesday is going to be a big day. The Fed is meeting this week. A lot of the economic indicators are going to come out on Tuesday or Wednesday this week. A lot of earnings reports are going to come out. So there's a lot of interest. It's going to be a big day on Wednesday. But all the prognostications seem to indicate that there's not going to be a drop in interest rates, which is what Donald Trump wants. Again, it's no secret. I mean, I talked last week about your background, that you help businesses and then you listen to what's going on in the world of economics or whatever. Talk to me about the net effect of interest rates for individuals and small businesses as they try to navigate. If the interest rates were to drop, obviously that would seem to be a positive benefit for people, because people are paying a lot for money right now. But is a drop in the interest rates always good? Does it necessarily mean that it's time for one, just because the president says that he wants them lower?
No. So Ed, we have to understand that the president is looking for lower interest rates for one reason: to lower the cost of servicing government debt. That is the reason why the president is looking for lower interest rates at this moment. But when we think about the Federal Reserve and the committee that deals with the interest rates and whether it goes up or down or what happens, they're worried about stable inflation and full employment. So sometimes things don't 100% align, right? Trump has an agenda and he wants to make sure that that's happening with the debt so that he can work on that. The Federal Reserve Committee is looking at everything and saying, well, we need to make sure that we are maintaining stabilization and full employment. Now, the truth is we've had full employment around 4%, little up and down a little bit, around 4%, 4.2%. But there's still uncertainties that come. I know we talked about before the show that potentially everyone is looking, all of our economic forecasts are saying they possibly could look at, in September, lowering the rates. If they do, I don't think it's going to be a whole lot. I don't think it's going to be like when it went up, right? That it went up in half a percent, which is huge to do. I don't think it's going to do that at all or more. I think that it will be something small. If they look at September and do it, I think people are waiting for the end of the year to really, September, you're getting closer to the end of the year. July is just too soon to know what's happening. We still have some layoffs that are happening. We still don't know what the tariff situation is going to be. A lot of economists are saying we won't feel the full brunt of tariffs until close to the end of the year. So I think they're hedging their bet and kind of waiting on some of those things. I'll be shocked if they do lower it at all. I'm not as surprised if they do a little bit in September, but I just think we have to get closer to the end of the year to know what's happening, what's going on, because we still have a lot of uncertainties. And as you said earlier about the shoe hasn't dropped yet for the tariffs. We really don't know the extent of what those tariffs are going to do on the economy. So that gives time for that as well.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that leading to the uncertainty is Trump's position on whether or not we've had deals cut with some of these countries. The Japan deal the other day would have seemed like it was a big deal. But when you pull back the curtain and you start looking at the particulars on it, Japan made out better than Trump let on. And they out-negotiated the United States. China still hasn't come to the table. And Sherelle, I think it's because, and I think we saw this when we were in Africa earlier this year. China's in Africa; they're in the Caribbean. They're all over the place. They don't need the United States like the United States needs them. I know Donald Trump keeps saying that manufacturing is going to return to the United States. I guess we're going to be making dolls and all the stuff you can buy at Dollar General or whatever in Whiteville. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think manufacturing is going to return to Whiteville. I just don't. And to believe.
Well, it's going to cost more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and prices have already gone up. You know what, Sherelle, I hear some music in my ear. That means we need to take a break. When we come back, I want to finish up talking about some of the numbers that are going to come out next week. And then switch gears. And I want to talk about Columbia University and some other things on the national level as we move closer to North Carolina news. So stay right there. We'll be right back after this week.
So people get ready for the train to Georgia.
Whiteville and surrounding communities, get ready to celebrate 143 years of faith, family, and fellowship. You're invited to the 143rd anniversary and homecoming celebration of the First St. Paul Missionary Baptist Church, happening Sunday, August 10, 2025, at 11:15 a.m., right here at the church in Whiteville, North Carolina. Reverend Vinston Rozier and the Spring Hill Missionary Baptist Church family will lead us in a powerful worship service you don't want to miss. This is more than a service. It's a celebration of legacy. Did you know that the roots of local congregations like Central Missionary Baptist Church trace back to this very church? In 1939, 12 faithful members stepped out on faith to start something new, and it all began here. Let us come together in unity, reflection, and praise for 143 years of God's goodness. Contact Brother Ronald McCoy at 910-317-1642 for more information. That's 910-317-1642. Join us at First St. Paul Missionary Baptist Church, where history, hope, and holiness meet. We'll see you on Sunday, August 10th at 11:15 a.m. Come home and be blessed.
Looking to take your business to the next level? Consider advertising on the new Power 1220 WENC. We might be in Whiteville, North Carolina, but we have listeners throughout the Cape Fear region and around the country. So if you're looking to reach a national audience, we can do that too. We're available online or in our app from anywhere on the planet. So when you're spending your ad dollars, remember, we reach the world.
And welcome back to our second segment of the conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. Sherelle James is here. It's Sunday, July 27, 2025. It's been hot, Sherelle, and we're going to talk about the weather in a little bit. But I do want to finish up on the economic news. Oil prices are down, and that's either good or bad, right? It keeps the gas prices down, but it's a longer-term indicator of how the world economy is. The world economy still is in flux because Russia and Ukraine is not settled. Israel, Palestine is not settled. There's still some unrest in Congo with Rwanda. Cambodia and Vietnam and Laos around that border, there's some problems going on. There is strife all over the place. South Sudan and Sudan still are having issues. Sherelle, the world is fairly unstable. And generally, the United States would come in and lead the effort to correct that, or there would be United Nations-led efforts to correct things. But we have pulled out of everything. We don't want to be in USAID. We don't want to be involved in anything. And as we wrap up this international and bigger news, one of the things I saw, Sherelle, is that this weekend, a lot of food was going to be destroyed that had been in USAID warehouses that could feed, you know, thousands, if not millions of people around the world. But because of these cancellations and programs, they're going to let the food expire. Let's end with that, Sherelle, on this national, sort of big national, international topic area. What in the world does that say that you're willing to, you know, just incinerate this food or either turn it into animal feed? Because why? What's the rationale here? I'm at a loss.
So that I can be right.
Is that it? I mean, so people are going to starve. I mean, you know, one of the weird things is, I won't say it's weird, but they did decide to leave in aid for HIV AIDS prevention. There was a really popular program that President Bush started. They did leave money in for that. But I don't know, it's, Sherelle, something just doesn't sit well with me when you're going to destroy food that could feed people and keep people alive. And it just seems short-sighted to me and doesn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, we'll leave it at that. I think you hit on something when you said that somebody just wants to be right, and I guess that's what it comes down to. Well, let's shift gears. You know, we had talked a lot about Tom Tillis last week and him not running. Mm-hmm. And I said that Roy Cooper was going to run. Guess what? Yesterday on Saturday,
he's running.
Roy Cooper's running. And yeah. Sherelle, you know, we both are in the Raleigh-Durham area most of the time during the week. Roy Cooper is a figure here in Raleigh. He's been in the legislature. He's been the attorney general. Now he's been the governor. He was one of the, I think, top two or three people in consideration to be the Democratic nominee for vice president. I think the reason why they didn't pick him is because they didn't think he could help pick off some of these swing states. But I beg to differ. I think he probably would have been, not that Tim Walz wasn't a good vice presidential candidate. I think Roy Cooper would have got you more, or either Governor Beshear from Kentucky. But who am I? What do I know? I'm just a guy who talks on the radio. These political consultants get paid a lot more money. The question then, Donald Trump said that he was going to primary Tom Tillis anyway. And Tom Tillis didn't want to be in it. And the Democrats see an opening. And is Roy Cooper the strongest candidate for the Democrats?
I think he is. I'm excited that he's running. And I think he's one of the strongest candidates for us to take that position. Like you said, he was on the short list for vice president, right, during the presidential elections. If he was good enough to be on the short list for vice president, why wouldn't he be good enough to be on to run and take Tom Tillis's spot?
Yeah.
And another edge to Democrats.
Yeah, so I think that's what's going to – the Democrats have to have somebody who has that sort of name recognition right off the bat. You don't get somebody who comes up who's been a state legislator most recently and then try to run them for a U.S. Senate seat. It's just not going to happen. I mean, because, you know, North Carolina is a weird state, though. We have managed to elect Democrats in a lot of statewide positions, including U.S. Senate. We have voted for Barack Obama, in the last two decades. You know, North Carolina seems to be the purplest of purple states, right? We're sort of the archetype for a purple state. We have this mix of people all the time. The problem that the Democrats have overall, though, is that they allow for the gerrymandering of House and Senate seats in the General Assembly. And that poses a particular problem for Democrats in that you have the majority of people who identify as Democrats, but you don't have the majority of seats in either House or Senate. It goes back to one thing we talked about last week, Sheryl, which is voting, period, right? That you have to vote regardless, no matter what, every time, or you provide an opening for your opposition to step in. Now, I'm going to stay on the same tact here. I say vote every time regardless. Now, that also means that if they vote every time regardless and they have more people who are opposed to the position that I represent, I run the risk of them being in charge, which is what's happened in North Carolina. Again, if you look on paper, North Carolina should be fairly equal in terms of representation in the General Assembly and in their House delegation to the U.S. House of Representatives, but it's not due to gerrymandering. That we know that. And then places like Texas, Sheryl, they've called openly to manipulate the seats so that they know that they can hold on to the majority in the House. The reason why the Republicans have a majority in the House, in the U.S. House of Representatives, is they were able to successfully gerrymander North Carolina, and we lost three Democrats. And that's the majority that the Republicans have. They're doing the same math now, and they're talking about doing it in Texas to ensure they maintain that majority. But in California, I did see Gavin Newsom say that he may call a special legislative session then to redraw districts in California, a place that has 50 seats, right? They have a lot of House seats, and they could offset anything that Texas does. I've said a lot there, but I think the bottom line is I still encourage people to participate in the democratic process, right? To vote, whether that's at the Senate level, in the Cooper, whoever race. And I say whoever, Sheryl, because they thought somebody was going to run on the Republican side, but they decided not to. Who was that, Sheryl? Tell me who that was. Who did they think was going to run that's not going to run?
Laura Trump, she declined and said no, that she would not be running. So, I mean, there it is. I think that people were on the edge of their seat thinking that she would be running, right? No, if I'm correct, on the day that she thought that they thought that she was going to announce she's running, she dropped music.
There you go.
But let me say this too. When you talk about the gerrymandering, There is a story that we did not talk about in Miami, where they've canceled the elections and postponed them to 2026. So here's another way that Miami has changed their election laws and just said, we're not having the election. We're going to wait to 2026 to have the election. And so there's a lot of crazy things that are happening, and that's on a local level. So this is why it's important to be involved locally, right? That's not at the state or the federal level. That's the local level. That's Miami, Florida. You got to be involved. You got to be involved in your community, your state, and then definitely your nation, because these things are happening. If nobody's saying anything about it, people are just going off and doing, as you said, when we don't oppose it or fight against it, they're going off and just doing whatever they want to do.
Yeah. And that brings up a good point, Sherelle. If you're running for office in Columbus County or Brunswick County, and you can hear us, you can contact us. We can have you on. But remember, if we have you on, we'll have on your opposition as well. We openly invite everybody to come on. We have to be fair about this. As a part of having our license as a radio station, selling ads for political ads is one thing. But then when you sit down and have a conversation, I'm willing to have a conversation with anybody. So it doesn't matter what political stripe you are. WENC is open to have a conversation with you, because you may end up, because we may not on paper look like we agree, it may be that you have some idea that the people of Columbus County or Bladen County or Brunswick County need to know, and we want to hear from you. So WENC Power 1220 is open for business in that regard as well. We want to know what your political position is, because listen, particularly in races, Sherelle, where you don't have millions of dollars flowing in, a lot of people just make the choice based on the R or the D or the I next to it, right? So either I'm independent, Democrat, or Republican, and they just make a blanket choice, and that's not always the best thing to do. Somebody may have an idea or actually have a policy. I'd like to see people have a real race. I think it's come down to just a lot of rhetoric most of the time, and not enough people expressing what they really believe. So you don't know what people believe, and then they get in office and they disappoint you because they don't do any of the things you thought they were going to do just by the letter beside their name. So again, if you're a candidate for office in the listening area, I'd like to hear from you. And then hopefully when the time comes and Roy Cooper is running for Senate and some of these other races, I'd like to be able to have those kind of people on, because a lot of times they don't make it out here. I also know that, I want to get Representative Rouser on here from the district that representative for in the U.S. House. He's a Republican. But we need to have him in the chair at WENC to push him on, what is he doing to help Columbus County and Bladen County and so on and so forth. So we'll be doing that. So, Sherelle, here's one other thing that, again, the filing for municipal elections, has happened. We've talked about, voting every time. We've talked about, those sort of big races, right? Every House seat is up, and Roy Cooper is going to be running for Senate. Things that happen at your dinner table, though, have you seen anything at all about what real consumer confidence is like? Or let's take it more personal. How do you feel? What is your confidence level, when you think about, again, you talk to small business owners all the time. Do they have any more or any less confidence in the economy at this point?
I keep saying this word, and so you guys just have to bear with me because there's no other word to say at the moment. It just depends on the word is uncertainty. So you guys don't have to wait and see what word is she talking about. But it just depends on the industry that the businesses are in. So there's not a one size fit all for the economy at this moment. Like in anything, we can take COVID. Some people thrived in COVID, right? Others did not. And were really almost, some went out of business. So you had both extremes in business. And I think that that's what we're seeing now as we watch legislation that's being passed and the different things that are happening. It really depends on what industry you're in. I've got a friend in IT, but does some work for DOD, and he's going to make out like a bandit. Because when we look at all the things that are happening overseas, the talks of war, we look at all the protection that's needed, you know, a lot of people make money during war. I'm not saying we're going to war, people. I'm just saying, as an example, that people make money doing war. War is big business, where other people do not, you know, make money. So I think it just depends on IT definitely is doing well. Anybody who's contracting with government space, especially DOD and some other government spaces, they're going to do very well right now. If you're in professional services or things that are more luxury, then there's a little bit more uncertainty there, right now, from those business owners in what's coming and what's going, especially in the clean energy and green space. They've kind of rewritten those laws a little bit. And so there will be some advantages to it. But in the grand scheme of thing, there's a lot of money that was pulled back because of it, which bankrupt some people and sent them closing their doors, and others trying to figure out and lean in a different way. So it is, there's not a one size answer for all business at this moment.
Yeah. And that's a good way to say it. That it's not a one size fit all, but there is much more consternation than I think a lot of people mm-hmm. who wanted Donald Trump to win. The whole notion that all prices were going to go down right away, the whole notion that stock market was going to be booming, the whole notion that all kind of things. I think, you know, if you just deport these people, then jobs will open up for Americans. That whole notion doesn't make any sense. But before we leave, Sherelle, we're going to come close to home and talk about Columbus County and Whiteville and in the surrounding area in the last segment. But there's one other story that's going to segue us into that, which is FEMA money for detention camps. At the same time, the story on the other side is going to be about FEMA money being taken away from the city of Whiteville. Talk to me real quick. You told me about a story about possibly some money going towards detention camps?
Yeah, about $600 million in grants going to states to build a alligator, Alcatraz alligator, however you say it, type detention center that is in Florida. And we know that there's some litigation around that detention center now, and some conditions that came out of that were not favorable, but FEMA has grant money that they are getting ready to launch out to be able to build. So, and the administration's thoughts are, we can build them across the U.S., then that can help us with at the border where there are processing people, that can help us with processing people faster. We can get them somewhere. And in the long run, it should cut down on the amount of work and things that need to happen. That is the, now, who are they going after with all of these places, detention centers? I don't know. I mean, you know, we see them now starting with a lot of immigrants from like Mexico and Hispanic immigrants and Latino immigrants. But who's to say it stops there? I don't know. Then that's just Sherelle's opinion. That's not news. That's Sherelle's opinion of where does that stop and what makes it make sense to build these horrible condition detention centers for people. Where's the humanity? And you know, you hear me talk about a lot of times about where's humanity in our world? Where's the humanity?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a whole lot. But I do hear some music in my ear, so that means we need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to come to Columbus County, and we're still going to talk about FEMA, though. We're going to talk about them clawing back $11 million, not just here in Columbus County, but around the country, and what that's going to mean for places like Whiteville, in particular Molly's Branch, where it floods and we got problems. So stay right there. We'll be right back after this message.
Power 1220 listening audience, please join us on August the 9th from 5:30 to 10 p.m. with Cast to See at Bethel Methodist Church. There's going to be food, fellowship, games, and a lot more. So please join us with Cast to See. And I think they're going to have 333 August the 9th from 5:30 to 10 p.m. That's at Bethel Methodist Church. Food, fellowship, games, and a whole lot more. Please check out their Facebook page. And if you need more information, Brandon Hall is going to be standing by to get you some more info. That is Cast to See on August the 9th from 5:30 to 10 p.m.
Tired of the same old radio? Well, not here. We're Power 1220, WENC, Whiteville, North Carolina.
Welcome back to our third and final segment of the conversation. I'm your host, Ed Clark. Sherelle James is here. It's Sunday, July 27, 2025. We've been talking about a lot of things. And when we ended, we started talking about FEMA. I told you the story before, folks, that both Sherelle and I have worked in emergency management in the past. I was an external affairs officer at FEMA. I know Sherelle worked in housing at FEMA. One of the partners in the radio station, Myra Sherrod, for a long time was a federal coordinating officer at FEMA, which is a very high-ranking position within FEMA. And she's back living in Whiteville. I was hoping that she could be on today, but she had some other obligations. So we'll get her in to try to help explain what happened. And what happened was FEMA had promised money to a lot of municipalities, Whiteville among them, Sherelle, for some disaster mitigation money. And when I was at FEMA, one of the things that we talked about a lot was if you could prepare well enough not to even have the flooding or whatever, that's what you want to do. So disaster mitigation is a big deal. And for a town like Whiteville, $4, $5, $6 million makes a lot of difference. But that money's gone now. And there was a big project to go into Molly's Branch, open that up to get better drainage. For the people who live in Whiteville, you know how it flooded. I only saw pictures. But it does affect the station. WENC was right there on the edge of where the flooding was, and there needs to be some mitigation in that area, or else the station's in danger, Sherelle. Again, you worked in disaster management. This whole notion that states somehow can manage this on their own is really strange to me. And that you would take $600 million when there's communities like Whiteville that need money for mitigation to use it for detention, folks in conditions that aren't the most savory conditions. So talk to me real quick about what do you think this long-term impact of these cutbacks with FEMA? First, we heard that people in Texas could not get through to the phone line, right? Now we're hearing that mitigation money is being taken away. Now we know that just the staffing at FEMA is suffering. Talk to me about FEMA and your feelings around that.
So I want to set the record straight first, Ed. that the states do take care of themselves, right? They have emergency, state emergency management is what they have. And so on a day-to-day basis, your city, your town, your county has some type of emergency management that is there and working on any disasters that come in. Most disasters aren't very big and detrimental to a wide population, right? And so the state takes care of those things under emergency management and then the state government. Now, FEMA comes in. FEMA doesn't just come into the state. They have to be invited into the state. And typically a state is inviting them in when the disaster has gotten beyond what they can handle and they need additional support. So if I am the state of North Carolina and I'm taking care of all of my counties, all the cities, all the towns in the way that I need to, and some big disaster comes, North Carolina is big for hurricanes, right? And we're in hurricane season now. The big floods have come and just flooded areas that have not been flooded before and all of those things. Then you need additional help and you should be able to call on your big brother who you give support to, you give money to, you give a lot of things to, right? It's not a one-way street. And I want to make sure we understand that the relationship is not a one-way street. So in that's an escalation to the next level, which would be United States, taking care of all of the United States, not just a state, but the U.S. government is responsible for the U.S., period. And so when we look at it in that way, and we understand it in that way, it makes no sense for them to say that we're no longer ready, we're no longer available, and we're going to hand it back to the states because they can do a better job. They are already doing a good job. They are asking for help because it's beyond their control. Now, I don't know about any of the listeners that we have, but, you know, I had a mom and a daddy, and I was grown. I'm still grown now. But every once in a while, I have to make a call for some help in that way, right? Whatever it may be, whether it's, can you babysit? Can I borrow a few dollars? Can I borrow your car because something happened with mine and it's in the shop? Whatever it may be. So, being a state who's regulated by the U.S. government, they should be able to call on the U.S. government and know that there's going to be support. There should not just be bottom up. There also has to be some top down when we talk about support.
Yeah, no, most definitely. You know, so this is all part of, and you know this, Sherelle, it takes a long time to recover. Yep. We're talking about, this is from Matthew in 2016 and Florence from 2018, right? And then more recent heavy rains just, you know, put more strain on the system. Just to be completely fair about what was going on here, the whole $11 million wasn't for Whiteville. It was for Columbus and Robeson County. Because there was also a lot of flooding and damage. If you remember, 95 was completely closed in Florence. I mean, I remember driving down and had to take a really big detour because I couldn't get to Florence. I was trying to get to South Carolina for I can't even remember what, but 95 was completely flooded and closed. And then all that construction work that's going on 95, right, as you make the turn off 74 going to Lumberton, a lot of that was because of damage and stuff that needed to be mitigated from that, in addition to expanding the highway, right, and making 74 an interstate. So to be completely fair, $3.7 million of that was for Molly's Branch project, and that was to restore the stream, then also to do some upgrades to the culverts and those kind of things, but also expand some stuff over near the middle school. Now, that was part of, though, a larger amount of money the state of North Carolina was going to lose out on. It was something like $200 million, Sherelle. $200 million. Throughout North Carolina, so there's communities like you know, probably up in Bertie County, probably in Onslow County, all over eastern North Carolina now that won't be able to do these mitigation projects. It was part of something called BRICS, Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities Program, that was going to give monies to the state and local governments and then also the tribal areas as well, because in Sampson County, the Kawari, you know, area, they experienced some flooding as well. So all that money is now off the table, and that $200 million they claw back goes into that $600 million that they're using to build these camps for detention. Now, I don't care where you fall in your politics, Sherelle. You know, one of the things we do at WENC is that we play gospel music during the day. And we play gospel music because people here are generally religious, and they have, they say they're Christian. Now, one of the things that's always vexed me is, how can you be, and I want to say this correct, how can you talk in one breath that you're Christian and at the same time you want to build alligator infested camps and then cut $3.6 million from Whiteville, $2.5 million for Fairmont, $2.1 million for Robeson County, $2 million from Lumberton specifically, take $240,000 from Columbus County, take $200,000 from Roland, take $90,000 from Pembroke, and take $90,000 from Tabor City. You explain to me how that equals $11 million. You explain to me those are all places in our listening area that are being impacted by this. And so you tell me how that is a good thing.
I can't tell you how that's a good thing, Ed, but what I can say is that money was going to be used for mitigation. And if you understand mitigation, mitigation is to make sure that you're built the way you need to be built so that when the next storm or the next disaster comes, you don't have the devastation that you had this time. And if you take money away from mitigation, you're only making a thing worse. And the best example I can give is having a house. And if you don't do the upkeep on the house, or from time to time, make sure that bigger projects are done, then over time, that house is going to collapse. It's going to be even more dangerous for the people who are staying in there. So I don't understand. I can't explain it to you because I don't understand why you would take money away to help towns mitigate, restore, in a sense, and we'll have Myra on to talk about what that restoration means, but restore, but mitigate for the future. You have to, you can't just deal with today. And as you said, we're talking about Matthews. We're talking about Florence that still has things that need to be done. And we're still steadily having more and more and more disasters happening faster across the country.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. You've got to prepare. Preparation is where I sat in FEMA. I did recovery, is how I got introduced to FEMA, to the state emergency management, because I worked for North Carolina Emergency Management alongside of FEMA. But I started in recovery and moved over to preparedness and response. You have to prepare. You have to. So when something happens, mitigation is part of recovery, but it also then circles back into preparation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly does. You know what, Sherelle, you know, I hope that, and I have to take a look at the list, but I don't know all the people who decided to run for office this time. The filing period closed on July the 18th for candidates. Election day is on November 4th. You have to be registered at least 25 days before election day, so make sure you are. So if you're in Boardman or Bolton or Brunswick or Sierra Gorda or Chadburn or Fairbluff or Lake Waccamaw or Sandy Field or Tabor City or Whiteville, if you got people that need to represent you, to try to figure out what to do now that we don't have this $11 million to work with, how we're going to get through this, and whether they're Democrat or Republican, the flood doesn't care. When there's a hurricane, it doesn't discriminate. I've been in communities with Sherelle where the whole town was destroyed. I mean, literally flattened by a tornado in Kansas or Minnesota or Georgia, where whole
flood towns in Princeville.
Were, yeah, Princeville here in North Carolina, where whole towns were underwater and will never be the same again. I don't want it to happen in any of those towns that I named that are in our listening area. Now that we're part of the community, Sherelle, I have to be concerned, because if I look out the window from the radio station, there's a creek right there, and that creek flooded the last time, and it wasn't good, and the water was high the first time I came down here after a heavy rain, and I'm concerned about that. So mitigation money would be useful. You know what?
A creek could definitely become a river.
Yeah, it could definitely become
a river. In the right situation. You
know, right. So, you know, I named all the towns in Columbus County that have municipal governments. I did it on purpose, Sherelle, because, again, I want people to understand that I'm trying to learn about the area that we take serious, WENC's role in the community. If you have a message that you need to get out, please drop it off at the station at 108 Radio Station Road. Just put it in the box. You can also send an email, ed@wencradio.com. Everybody knows the number here has been the same, apparently, for the last 400 years. That's 910-640-1220. If you need to leave a message for us and all of that. Again, I'm eternally grateful to get this opportunity to be part of WENC. One thing we don't have to say, Sherelle, we don't have to say this is not the opinion of the station owners. So that is one big relief here, that it is my opinion. We do run the station, but we try to say stuff that's true. And I told you last week that we try to give you a fact every time that we're on here that we know that it's 100% certain. I read off all those towns. And if you add up all the money they lost, that equals $11 million. And that's a big deal for a county like Columbus County. Anyway, you got anything else you got to do for us before we got to get out of here, Sherelle?
No. You guys enjoy the rest of your Sunday afternoon as you get ready for the week. And I just say, make each day the best you can.
Yeah, it's just all stay around. On WENC Power 1224. Some interesting music. We got some Afrobeat this afternoon. We got some smooth jazz. We got some classic R&B. We got reggae later on in the night. Overnight, we got classic jazz. And then in the morning, starting again Monday morning at 5 o'clock, we got classic gospel. So, listen, I always tell you, go out and do something good for somebody today, and I really do mean that. And we'll see you again next time. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Then I go to my brother, and I say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on
long time coming, but I know the change gonna come.